Hello and a very warm welcome to Central Stage. Good to have you with us. Now, on January the 25th, 2011, Egypt became the second Arab country after Tunisia to revolt against its government in a wave of uprisings that struck the world. However, the country's first democratically elected president was ousted on July the 3rd, 2013, and things haven't calmed down ever since. Hello again and welcome back. Now today we're going to talk about Egypt, the constitutional referendum, and of course the sorry state of affairs at the moment. And in order to do so, we're delighted to be joined in the studio by a great political analyst and also well-established and professional journalist, Mr. Hamid Golpira. It's a pleasure to welcome you to Central Stage.
Hi, how are you doing? And thanks for inviting me to your show.
Thanks very much for being with us. Now, Hamid Golpira is a top writer working with Tehran Times. Some of his articles have been translated into several languages, including German and Russian. Hamid also works for Press TV. Now, hopefully shortly in our London studio, we'll be also joined by a top Egyptian analyst, Dr. Ali Kabani, and we hope that we can have him right after this short break. So please do stay with us.
On January 25th, 3 years ago, Egypt became the second Arab country after Tunisia to revolt against its authoritarian government in a wave of uprisings known as the Islamic Awakening or the Arab Spring, and the rest is history. On February 11th of the same year, Egyptian dictator Hosni Mubarak was deposed. More than a year later, on June 30th, 2012, Mohamed Morsi was sworn in as Egypt's new president. However, the country's first democratically elected president was ousted on July 3, 2013, after anti-government protests were once again hailed and the country's military took control. Morsi was replaced by interim president Adli Mahmoud Mansour, who also heads the Supreme Constitutional Court. In the meantime, on the third anniversary of the Egyptian Revolution, Egyptian riot police were quite busy dispersing anti-government protesters, among other places in the capital, Cairo. On a bloody anniversary day, tens of thousands of Muslim Brotherhood activists and supporters staged nationwide demonstrations to mark the third anniversary of the revolution that toppled former dictator Hosni Mubarak. Police used violent force against demonstrators, and a number of opponents of Morsi attacked his supporters with stones. Egypt's health ministry reported on Sunday that nearly 50 people had been killed and almost 250 others injured in 24 hours of clashes that broke out during rival protests marking the anniversary of the 2011 revolution. The deaths were reported in the cities of Cairo, Alexandria, Giza, and Minya. Most of the fatalities occurred in the capital and its suburbs. In addition, the Interior Ministry said that over 1,000 people had been detained during the protests. While the world was looking at Egypt's toppled president Mohamed Morsi protesting his new trial Tuesday from inside a glass-encased metal cage, the problems of the most populous Arab country seemed far from being over.
Hello again, it's great to have you with us. Now we've called this edition of Central Stage Egypt's bloody anniversary, and we know that at least 49 people were killed in clashes there as rallies mark the anniversary of the 2011 uprising which overthrew Hosni Mubarak. Now, Hamid, did you expect this third Egyptian revolution anniversary to get so bloody?
Well, there was always a possibility of such a thing happening. There is a possibility of military, police forces, security forces overacting. There's a possibility of the people who feel that their democratically elected president was unjustly deposed. So there was always a possibility of that. Whether, you know, one was looking forward or expecting it, there was a possibility of it.
But, you know, the thing is that it started out quite, you know, in the right direction, probably. Hosni Mubarak was ousted, then, you know, actually we had the presidential elections and the first democratically elected president was there. And then what happened afterwards probably didn't follow the same pattern, did it?
Well, yeah, it seems like things went terribly wrong. But, well, it's many, many different forces, some forces in Egypt and some forces outside of Egypt weren't so pro, well, they're actually anti-Muslim Brotherhood and anti-Morsi, so they were not in favor of that to begin with.
You know, the thing is, I was basically having a look at different websites, and I normally also have a look at the Ikhwan Brothers website. So basically, they said that probably one of the mistakes that Morsi made was that he should have been tougher on the military. What's your take on that?
Well, I think, yeah, he probably should have been tougher on the military, but at the same rate, too, Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood had to make efforts to reach out and connect with the people more. They were quite connected to the people, even for, I mean, of their 85-year history, they were fairly connected to the people until the last 10 years things began to drift apart. Not that they were far apart, they got a large amount of votes. Mm. And they got a large amount of votes, and some were strong supporters of them, and some of the voters were not so strong supporters of them, but they were opponents of Mubarak and military dictatorship. So I think they should have made them a little bit more happy too,
right.
But all forces around.
So I was saying that probably Muslim Brotherhood was too complacent about its achievements.
Well, maybe, I don't know. I just think that they misassessed things, didn't play their cards right, that they had to like try to make like the general populace happy, that you see a certain amount of people who voted for them like turned against them and seemed to ally with the military, who those same people were against the military before.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of a sad situation, but this is what has been happening.
Okay, great, thank you very much indeed. Now I'm just told that we now also have the pleasure of being joined in our London studio by an established Egyptian political analyst. Dr. Ali Al-Kabani, it's a pleasure to welcome you to Central Stage.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thanks for being with us. Now, before you joined us, we're talking about the anniversary day of Egypt's revolution. 3 years on, probably not many expected that Egypt's revolution anniversary would turn out to be so bloody. What about you?
Actually, it was expected because the blessed revolution of the 25th of January was a shock to the whole world and to the elements of counter-revolution locally, regionally, and internationally. That's why, after some time, the conspiracy was prepared to end the revolution and get rid of the democracy or the democratic experiment in its infancy in Egypt. Of course, the Muslim Brotherhood made many mistakes. So the military, who wanted to jump back to power and restore the military rule, used the acute polarization and the division among the Egyptian people to come back to power. So those people, even who refused the Islamic parties or Islamic political parties, they didn't imagine that they launched the revolution of January 25th to replace Mubarak and Tantawi with Sisi and Subhi. And this is what we are seeing now. The military rule is coming back to Egypt even worse than before.
Right.
Because we heard Sisi first saying
Do you know, the thing is, Dr. Al-Kabbani, just one point I want to mention is that the Amnesty International actually says that 1,400 people have been killed in the political violence since July 2013, so when Morsi was ousted. And most of them due to excessive force used by security forces. I think that's a very shocking figure, isn't it?
This is a shocking figure, but that's why I'm saying that the regime which we are going to have in Egypt now is even worse than Mubarak regime. It's more brutal, it's more bloody, and they want to set an example that no one, but no one can open his mouth and object to what they are doing, let alone protest or have a different say. And it is not only the Islamists they are confronting and arresting and putting in jail, it is also even some of those of the rebellious movement of the 30th of June. We have a lot of political activists who are from the secular parties and from 6th of April, they are now in jail. It's just because they said we are against the Ikhwan, but also against the military rule. And we did not object or protest against the Islamist rule to replace them with the military rule. But as I said, the military actually used the dispute and used the division of the Egyptian people to jump back on power and steal that power. And while Sisi said that he will never put his name as a candidate in the presidential election, not for the history to say that the military people did what they did on the 3rd of July to restore power and for personal interest, we find him now putting his name as a candidate. In fact, even not as a candidate, he is putting his name as the future president, and the military establishment, unconstitutionally and illegally, they are supporting Sisi for the presidency, because that establishment shouldn't actually interfere in politics and shouldn't side with one political party in Egypt against the other, and shouldn't have a candidate for the presidential election.
Right, thank you very much indeed. Now, we know that Hamid, some demonstrators actually called for affirmation of the regime in a stark contrast to the those who were opposing the current regime. So they were probably the supporters of Sisi. So it seems that Egypt society is still highly divided, isn't it?
Well, it is divided. Like I said, some of these people who seem to be Sisi supporters, they're not even that strong Sisi supporters either. They're some of the same ones who voted, a few of them, who voted for Morsi. They're more like they became dissatisfied with the Muslim Brotherhood program. Perhaps some of them thought it was too Islamic, or they had some other dissatisfaction. Some people were a little bit tricked into thinking the economy wasn't getting back online fast enough. But Morsi was only in power for 1 year, and you could say Mubarak ruined it for 30 years, Sadat for all those years before, and so he inherited a ruined economy. It wasn't like he could just snap his fingers and fix the economy with, you know, you probably have half the people in the country making $2 or $3 a day equivalent salary, so they're fairly poor. There's not a, you know, good income for many people.
Right.
But see, having the people being tricked to think, oh, how come he's not fixing things so fast when it's not possible to do that? So a lot of factors are coming into play in this, and maybe some few people are kind of supporting like a kind of old guard thing, but I think most are not quite like that. Most were rejecting one or the other. They were saying they don't so much like Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood side with these guys, or they didn't like some some of the Morsi voters before, where it wasn't they liked even him so much in the Muslim Brotherhood. They were more rejecting the military. So
what do you think about the supporters of Sisi? Do you think that they're orchestrated by the government itself, or they're real supporters of Sisi?
Well, perhaps maybe even some people in foreign countries. I mean, the global ruling class, it was maybe not so happy that the Muslim Brotherhood came in, that even though their program was fairly modest, it wasn't overly radical as their some of their historical, you know, line was, that they were following at least a relatively, you know, even course and moderate course. They were not trying to be too sudden, but at the same time, you know, it seems that these certain powers
sectarian approach, didn't they? I mean, I remember the case that actually Morsi was sitting there. There was a lecture given by some, you know, extremists against the Shiite Muslims, and then we know what happened to some Shiites who were actually performing the religious, you know, ceremonies. And so probably it was not very, you know, mild at that front, was it? That it comes to sectarian issues.
Well, no, that's like, okay, sectarian within Islam, but there's not a really, really big Shia community to begin with in Egypt to begin. Not that there should be prejudice against Shia, but I'm saying, you know, there's not a really big, it's not like it's 50-50 or something. Right. There's not really a big Shia community. And I think he gets too much blame and some Muslim Brotherhood for all of this too. Like a lot of this is agitation too. And a lot of this, almost everything is, in many ways, it's agitation from outside. Because you think, like, how did Mubarak stay in power for so long? As if he had some grand support from the Egyptian people? No, the global ruling class, the basically world capitalism, and it supported him, you know, and they saw him as an ally in the region, an ally against the poor people, an ally against Islamic movements, an ally against any kind of revolutionary movements, you know, and being in their line of authoritarianism.
Great. Thank you very much indeed, Hamid, for that. We're going to take a short break. After the break, we'll be talking a bit more about the supporters of Sisi, and we'll also be talking about the Egyptian society is being highly divided, and whether the opponent's next step would be to put Sisi as the candidate for the presidency. So please do stay with us. Hello again. It's great to have you back with us. Now, for opponents of Morsi, the next step on the path should be electing Sisi to the presidency. And Dr. Kebani, analysts say it is still unclear whether Sisi will run, though some settlers seem to push him in that direction. What's your take on that?
It's actually a theatrical farce to say even that there will be a presidential election, because now the military establishment is saying that Sisi is the candidate for the presidency, and if you don't vote for Sisi, you are against the Egyptian army and you are supporting the terrorists. So they are actually intimidating the voters before even the election is done. But in any way, the outcome of this election is already known, because it will be fraudulent, and Sisi will be the next president in Egypt, because the guy will not resign from the army unless he is sure he will become a president. So it is all planned, it's all a conspiracy. And from day one of Dr. Morsi coming to power, the conspiracy was prepared to get rid of him and to bring back the military. You can always notice that, for example, the Constitutional Court dissolved the parliament. So they can talk saying that they are talking on behalf of the people, they are representing the people, and they can put people in the street in a rebellious movement, and they say, we want a change. If there was a parliament, no one can talk on behalf of the people except their representative inside the parliament. Also, if Sisi was really siding with the people and he want a democratic life in Egypt, he would started with the election of parliament. But as we can see that this roadmap, which was agreed, we were told, by the political powers in Egypt, have been changed drastically and dictatorially by the interim president, by putting the presidential election before the parliamentary election. The other thing, in a democracy, as we understand it, it's a multi-party system.
Right.
So how a Sisi is going to fight this election without a political party? Or is he going to form a political party like the ousted President Mubarak did? The other thing, if he doesn't have a majority in parliament, how can he rule? So as you can see, it is all a political chaos and a political confusion. No one understands what will happen except the military, who know that this is a military dictatorship. Mm-hmm. They will put their man, and no one else in Egypt can oppose him or reject their decision and dictates.
But, you know, the thing is, Dr. Kyabani, that the constitutional referendum held in Egypt on 14th and 15th of January 2014, the outcome of that, when we look at the outcome, the turnout, and also the outcome, we see that according to the state media, over 95% of those who participated, they basically voted in favor of the new charter. So what do you think this number tells us then?
First, we have to realize that all the people opposed the military coup, they boycotted this referendum. So 62% nearly of the Egyptian voters boycotted this election. As for the outcome, as I said, in all military regimes all over the world, the outcome of the election or a referendum is already known to be above the 90%. I wonder how can a draft resolution, a draft constitution, have 98% approval, while heavenly revelation from God never had this consensus? So even sacred books like the Bible, the Quran, doesn't have this 98% approval. So as I said, this is fraudulent referendum, fraudulent election. And we can see that even in counting the votes during this referendum, they didn't allow the votes to be counted in the branch stations, but they said each branch and each voting station should send all the voting papers to the central headquarters and be counted there. The
right.
only reason for that is, of course, to announce the outcome the way they see fit.
Okay, that may be true, Dr. Kyabani, but the thing is that let's look back at the time that the first constitutional referendum was held at the time of Morsi. Then also we had only a 33% turnout.
It's true. The turnout in Egypt, like in all other third world countries, and sometimes even in democracies, is not very high. So sometimes 40, 30% go to this election. But at least 6 million at the time of Dr. Morsi said no to his constitution, so it was free and fair election. So we can't expect that everybody who went to vote agreed on this military constitution, which established the military to be a state above the state. It allowed civilians to be tried in military courts. It gave immunity to the Minister of Defense for 8 years. Who is a democrat in the whole world who can accept a constitution like that? This constitution will go to the dustbin of history once Egypt have a new democratic country, and if Egypt have a new democratic system.
Okay, thank you very much
so
indeed.
So I don't count actually...
Okay, go ahead.
I don't count on results and outcomes under military regimes, because it's not fair and transparent election.
Thank you very much indeed. Now, Hamid, I just want to read you a quotation about the outcome of the constitutional referendum. So Egypt's spokesman for the presidency, Ehab Badawi, said that this vote represents a resounding rejection of terrorism and clear endorsement of the roadmap to democracy, as well as economic development and stability. So they apparently are... basically associating Muslim Brothers with terrorism. and these statements being made. What's your take on that?
Well, for me, that's unacceptable. I mean, this is the party that won the presidential election, a real democratic election, and not like this other thing, like our other guest, I think his name is Dr. Cabanet, was pointing out that, like, okay, the numbers don't seem to add up. Even if less people voted, like how come it's so high in approval? Like, it reminds one of, I think it was Joseph Stalin who said, it doesn't matter who votes, it matters who counts the votes. Well, see, it's a problem. If it's like this, it doesn't matter who votes, it matters who counts the votes. This is a serious problem. And if they want to do this in the presidential election, it's going to be a serious problem. But I think also these military people are overplaying their hand. They're overplaying their hands if they think, which they maybe do, they probably do have support from powerful forces in the Western world, the people who control the Western world's economy and much of the world economy. So they have a certain support. They probably have support from, you know, indirect support from Israelis and others who want to have like this kind of government that wouldn't be challenging them. So it seems like they have some kind of support and a small amount of supporters in their country, and maybe some of the powerful and rich people and people who like the old system. So they might feel comfortable that they have a certain amount of support, but they have to also factor into the equation that, like it is, even if people think this Arab Spring and all this has faded into an Arab winter and autumn and all of this stuff, people suddenly know that since this Tunisia and all of these things, and you know, it came on to Egypt and Bahrain and other things going on in the Arab world, people suddenly know that, like, okay, we don't have to sit around for 30 years and tolerate a dictatorship and let people crack down on us. And people are beginning to realize their power as a mass, that they're not, that at least a certain amount of the people, I could say that probably 25 or 30% of the people or more are going to be very much against this kind of military dictatorship that's seeming to trying to strengthen itself. And another probably 20 or 30 or 40%, you know, or more, or maybe 50% are at least, you know, they're also opposed to it. Maybe they might not want to take as strong a stance, but they're also opposed to it. So, and if they see 30% of the people taking a strong stance, maybe they come and have demonstrations and this and that. The other 50% might come along, and then you'll have 80%. You know, at least you'll have a majority. How it will pan out, I don't know. But I have a funny feeling that the people are not going to just sit around and say, well, let's do the same thing we did before. We had 30 years of dictatorship. Now we have to wait 30 years again. And the younger generation also has a different view of things. They're not so willing to just accept a system that's totally unacceptable to them.
Let's look back. I think actually we're talking about the Arab Spring about a year ago together, and I think one of the questions I put to you at the time was, do you think that this domino effect would go on to be present? And I think you said it's very difficult to predict. But now we know that not many other, you know, countries followed, first of all, and those even that were associated with spring now are associated with winter and autumn. So how did things go that wrong?
But like I said, there are many things going. There are many things that also have to be taken into consideration. Like one could say, okay, we didn't see all of the Arab governments collapse. You didn't see all the monarchies go. Yes. You didn't see a lot of things happen. But at the same rate, like I say, they're in Saudi Arabia, of all places, where you didn't see protests and demonstrations, you do see it now, and more than it ever was before. Right. And it might not be in such strong numbers, and the current government of Saudi Arabia is very much strongly backed up by the West, and their own forces and security forces are making serious efforts to not let things get out of hand. But there are certain things bubbling up from under the surface. Everything is not all calm in the Arab world, I wouldn't say.
Right, it's not calm. Thank you very much indeed for that. Now it's time for today's Central Stage online search after this short break. Hello again and welcome back. Now it's time for today's look at the web pages, or rather web pages that basically took center stage over the course of the last week. So let's start by having a look at Ikhwan website. This is actually the official English website of Muslim Brothers, and shows that a woman casting, you know, her vote. So basically, the Muslim Brothers are calling those yes counts as glossy, or probably grossly exaggerated yes counts. That what they're referring to that. And, you know, they said sometimes higher than, let me read that, it's interesting. I mean, according to Muslim Brothers, sometimes higher than total province population.
Well, see, again, it's not who cast the ballots, but who counts the votes.
Probably some parts of the population were not counted or before. Okay, let's go to our next web page. So this is from Press TV's website, 49 dead in 24 hours of clashes in Egypt. So very sad development in the Arabs' most populous country. It's very sad, isn't it?
Yeah, and one could see it as certain members of the security forces and their leadership wanting to show that they're cracking down with an iron fist to try to strike fear into the hearts of the people to say, okay, don't be coming out into the streets, don't protest. It's not working so far, and like I said, I don't think it will work so far, and especially the younger generation is not having the same attitude as the older generations, and even the older generations are waking up to things.
Okay, great. Let's go to our next webpage. So this is again from Ikhwan Web, and shows the supporters of Morsi actually taking to the streets. So there are still, I mean, since Muslim Brothers was associated, was actually being, associated with a sort of terrorist group, or named, labeled as a terrorist group, I think it was very dangerous for the population, for the supporters to come out, but it seems that they're still coming out in spite.
Well, they have support. They probably have a base of, of over 25 to 30%. Maybe some another 20 or 30 or more percent have some inclination toward them. So you have a large amount of people, and it's it's not a small amount of people. Over 8 decades of the Muslim Brotherhood has they have a certain level of support. It's not going to just go away because someone or other has called them a terrorist. If themselves the military are terrorists, that's even more ridiculous.
Okay, great. Let's go to our next web page. This is again from Press TV. Gunman hit Egyptian Interior Ministry official in Cairo. So that was also another development, that the Egyptian Interior Ministry official was hit by gunmen. Right. So let's go to our last web page. And this is from CTV News. Look at that picture. And we had basically Hosni Mubarak in that cage. Now we have Morsi, and God knows who's next.
Well, again, it shows that, like, okay, all these countries that say they're so in support of democracy, okay, they know he did win that election, Morsi. Whether you like him or not, Morsi won the election, and they didn't he didn't cheat. Okay, so where are all these supporters of democracy when there's a coup d'etat and they say there's supporters of democracy? Well, because they weren't happy with who won the fair election, so they're happy with the coup plotters who made a coup,
and the most,
which is hypocritical.
Probably is asking for help from God, probably. I mean, if you look at his face, probably his face picks lots
really
of, sentences and words, and probably much louder than words themselves. Okay, thank you very much indeed for your valuable comments. Now, let's talk a little bit, Dr. Kabbani, about the turnout of the constitutional referendum. Estimated turnout rates fluctuated widely, ranging from an Interior Ministry official's report of more than 55% to state media reports of just over 36%. Which one do we have to believe, do you think?
Actually, we should believe none, because, as I told you, we don't believe figures which is coming from illegitimate government and the government of the military coup with a propaganda machine which promote everything to help that regime and to make it established. So, according to their own figure, the turnout was 38%, while the military government and El Sisi himself was hoping that more than 60% of the voter will go and vote yes for the referendum, because that will be voting yes to the change of 3rd of July. This will be a vote for no to terrorism, etc. So it was very disappointing for them for only 38% to turn up for the voting in the referendum. And this is according to their main official figures. So the real figures, nobody would know. So the turnout was very disappointing to them. And it means that 62% of the Egyptian people were not for this military coup and were not for the change which happened. I also want to comment on that dictatorial declaration by the interim government that the Muslim Brotherhood is a terrorist organization.
Right.
And they dissolved it and confiscated the money and all that. They didn't know that Noqrashi in 1948 did that. Nasser in 1954 did that. Sadat did that. Mubarak did that. And they are all gone, and Muslim Brotherhood are still there, because the Brotherhood is an idea, and ideas and political ideas do not die if there are people around supporting them. And as your guest rightly mentioned, that the Muslim Brotherhood at least have got 25% popular support, while the secular and the liberal political parties proved during the election experiment that they lost 5 fair and transparent elections. And the Islamic parties and the Islamists won the majority in the 5 of those elections. So the secular and liberal parties realized that their weight in the street is nothing. They don't have a popular support. They are a cartoon parties. So it's better for them to leave on the table of the military and take the remnants rather than fighting in a democratic life and losing humiliatingly like what happened to them.
Thank you very much indeed for that. Now we just have, I think, Hamid, about 40 seconds to the end of the show. So are you optimistic about the future of Egypt in just 20 seconds?
Maybe. In the long term, yes, but in the short term, it might not be so good. But I think in the long term, things will eventually work out. And maybe in the short to medium term, some things are coming. Because like I said, I believe the people have woken up a little bit.
Right.
And they know the power of themselves united in masses. So I don't think they will be frightened by dictatorships like they were before.
So that means you're optimistic.
So it's a good omen for the future. It's a good sign.
Thank you. Dr. Kibani, we have just 10 seconds. Are you optimistic about the future of Egypt?
I'm exactly agreeing with your guest in the studio. I am optimistic because the phobia of fear have been treated and the wall of fear have been broken. So the young people of Egypt who launched the greatest revolution in their history will not accept to go back under military rule and be slaves once again and allow corruption and destruction to damage their interest and their country.
Thank you very much indeed. Unfortunately, that's all the time we've got for the moment. But before I go, I'd like to thank again my top guests. We had Dr. Ali Al-Kabani, established political analyst and writer in our London studio. And we also had Mr. Hamid Golpira, established journalist and top writer working with Tehran Times and Press TV in our Tehran studio. Thanks very much, Inid, for coming on, for talking to us, and of course, for those insights. Until next week, from me, our guest today, and the rest of the team here in Tehran, the Central Stage team, it's goodbye for now. Thanks very much, Inid, for watching. Thank you very much. It's great.